Welcome to Plot Pit, the show where we'll take almost anything and uncover a story within for you to use in your own tale-telling mediums of choice. From novels, novelettes, short stories, poems, songs, scripts for screen and stage, it doesn't matter, we'll spec something, and you might use it. I'm your host, William Atkinson, here in the pit with local author John LeMay, author of over 40 books, including the noted desperado Pancho Dumez, set in the Billy the Kid mythos. Hello, John. How you doing?
Doing good, Will. Today we're going to talk about vampires.
Ooh, that sounds fun.
Hopefully it doesn't suck.
All right, well, we'll begin the descent today in the pit. John, introduce us to our subject matter for the day.
So one of my favorite real vampire stories I've ever heard, and there's more real vampire stories than you would think, is set back in 1904 in New Orleans and involves a wealthy socialite named Jacques Saint Germain. And Germain, he would throw these extravagant parties, but people noticed something funny about Germain. One, he would never eat, he would only drink. Two, he didn't seem to have any permanent silverware or food in his home. These parties were always catered. Caterers would bring the silverware, the plates and everything. So again, he had no silverware or plates in his house. And three, there was this portrait on the wall of what he said was a distant ancestor named Comte de Saint-Germain, who looked just like him, I believe dated back all the way to the 1700s. So one night at one of Germain's parties, a woman flings herself from the balcony and she's screaming. She's, you know, so terrified to get out of Germain's house, she literally risked her life to jump off the balcony.
Oh, wow.
And the party guests go up to her and, you know, they're like, well, what happened? Why'd you jump? And she said, well, Count Germain, he bit me. He bit me on the neck and tried to drink my blood. And so the police come. And the police, you know, the woman was a prostitute, so they looked at her as, you know, a lowly nobody who maybe was making things up. Maybe she was on drugs or she was really drunk. So they didn't really take her very seriously. And because Germain was wealthy, they gave him, you know, special treatment. They said, well, just tomorrow, if you would please come by the police station and just give us a statement, but we won't make you come in tonight. So tomorrow comes and Germain never shows up at the police station. So they go to his home and he's gone. And they're rifling through his house and they find something very suspicious. They find these blood-stained tablecloths and they find bottles of wine that later when they examine them, they discover that they're not just wine, they're a mixture of wine and human blood.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so now the problem with this story is I don't know what the actual source for it is. A lot of people recount it as though it really happened. I've never seen a newspaper article with this in it. You know, typically we do newspaper articles, but a lot of people over the years have told this story as though it really happened. Comte de Saint-Germain, now that was a real figure for sure, for sure. You know, you can find his portrait online, all the information on him. And even back in the old days, not Jacques Germain from New Orleans, but Saint-Germain from the 1800s, 1700s, whenever it was, he would even claim that he was hundreds of years old and knew figures that had existed, you know, hundreds of years before. So he seems to be history's possibly real Count Dracula.
Very interesting. Now, Dracula, of course, has got a long mythology behind him, specifically, you know, Transylvania and everything mm-hmm. else, right? And that's just excluding any of the modern folklore.
Yeah, that was just, you know, Vlad the Impaler. Nobody really ever said Vlad the Impaler was a vampire necessarily, but Germain, they said, was a vampire. And he did also have a castle over in Transylvania, which is kind of odd, too.
Really?
Yeah.
So we've got this guy in New Orleans that people are claiming to be a vampire.
Yeah.
And he's got evidence, or we have evidence from the police that showed up where he's got this mixture of human blood with wine, you said?
With wine, yeah.
This is just, it's almost bizarre.
Yeah.
Like beyond mm-hmm. fiction.
Oh, yeah. And it's basically, you know, what we've got is the villain for our story, whatever it's going to be coming up. But before we move on to that, I just wanted to say there's people out there today who say Saint Germain is still out there. And in the 1970s, he was this certain actor. And I don't remember which actor it was, but they were like, yeah, that actor was really Saint Germain. And Saint Germain just reinvents himself every couple of years. So there's also an unmade movie about Count Dracula. Ken Russell, who did the movie The Devils, which was very controversial, he wanted to do a movie on Dracula. And I read the script for it that was never shot. And his idea for Dracula was basically this Saint Germain. And what I mean by that was Ken Russell's version of Dracula was an immortal artist who would reinvent himself every 100 years, you know, when he should have died. And that was a really unique take on Dracula, but it's very similar to Comte Saint-Germain. So I just thought that was really interesting.
Now, two things pop into my mind is the story of Dorian Gray.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so there's one aspect of going down. The other one that really does hit the nail on the head here that you had mentioned reinventing yourself every so often, there is a movie out that you can check out on Amazon or any one of the streaming services, depending upon the time that they actually have it. It's called A Man from Earth.
Hmm.
Have you ever heard of this?
Mm-mm.
So the premise of this movie, A Man from Earth, is that this caveman doesn't die. He has a genetic abnormality where he lives indefinitely. He gets hurt, he regenerates, all right? So you've got this kind of, you know, immortal guy who lives going all the way back to Stone Age caveman era, through the Bronze Age, through the Iron Age, and into the time period of Christ, going into the Middle Ages, and then the Dark Ages, and etc., right? All the way up to now, where he's a professor of anthropology and history in the California university system. And he throws this going away party. He had been at the university for something like 10 years or whatever, and he's throwing this party of hey, bye-bye. And he's got a few of his close academic friends that come over, and they play this kind of what if scenario game, right? And somebody mentions, you know, what if we don't die? And he kind of takes that and runs with it and pretends that he doesn't die, or so they think.
Mm-hmm.
It eventually comes down to the point where they have this very hot debated contention point over whether or not this guy was Christ. And he eventually says, no, I just made everything up, yada, yada, you know, and then goes on. Ultimately, they did a sequel. The first one is far much more interesting because it leaves you with that. Did this really happen or not? Is he really, you know, an immortal character? And in the end, I'll just leave it at that. It's really good. And what's really fun about it is it feels like it's one of those short story type concepts that was very low budget, didn't have a lot of money, and it was all filmed within a single room. Well, maybe there was another scene, if I remember right. They actually go out. And so he's like at his house, there's this one room, and they're having this conversation in it. You feel like you're in the room in this conversation as it's taking place. It was very engaging and it really drew me in. I thought it was very curious, and the premise was really interesting. So it's called A Man from Earth. So that kind of fits with this rebuilding or regenerating idea, regenerating your persona. So we have this vampire then that's regenerating himself every so often. I came across an article out of the Mountain Home Maverick, July 11, 1907, page 6. The headline is Vampire Pipe. And the article starts off, this little story is set down in these columns to prove that truth is, after all, more strange than fiction. Right there, it's starting off as though this is a legitimate story, but it sounds like it's really, really crazy and really out there. And when I sent this to you, you said you didn't really believe it. And so I started having to go through and, you know, come up with some other situation. This particular article had been reprinted from a previous, like 6 weeks prior. The incident actually took place in May of the same year. And it's this gentleman, Walter D. Hunter. He's 22 years old. He's a graduate out of Pittsburgh School of Mechanical Engineering, and he moves to Chicago. He invents this part for an ice machine, and he sells it to the Armour and Company food packing plant. And now there's a whole lot of stories in the, if you search Armour and Company, they have a lot of scandals and various other articles that show up. I think they were investigated for trying to corner the market and stuff. So there's a lot of history behind just this. However, he sells this part. They install it on the top of one of their buildings where they're making ice at this food packing facility, presumably meat and whatnot. So it's like a slaughterhouse. And he's called in to repair it. He dies. It's an industrial accident. What had happened was he got his leg caught in one of the pipe openings, and the machine had such an amount of force, it sucked all of his blood out. And the autopsy report said his heart had shriveled up and his lungs were completely collapsed. The article here out of the newspaper aforementioned, The Vampire Pipe, is quite suiting for that. And it fits with this idea of a vampire or somebody, right? And if you ever want to think about what a vampire might do to your body, well, here you go.
Yeah.
So we've got this vampire. If we were to string that story of Germain together with this Walter D. Hunter, the cover story could be it was an industrial accident, mm-hmm. when in reality it was this guy from New Orleans who had reinvented himself, mm-hmm. and now works at or lives in Chicago or is part of the Armorin Company.
Well, yeah, and luckily the articles are pretty close to each other. You know, like I said, the Germain story was 1904, and you said this was 06 or 07, was it?
I believe it was 1907, yes.
Yeah, so definitely. Or...
Yeah, Mountain Home Maverick, 1907, July 11. Now, again, the incident occurred in May.
So one place where my mind goes is this is like vampires and the Industrial Revolution, and maybe the vampires are trying to create a machine that does their work for them.
Ooh, okay, yeah. So now we're over into that series called The Strain.
Yeah, okay.
Have you seen that?
I know what it is.
Okay, so yeah, you've got this vampire guy and he partners up with the Nazis and this is, you know, then that falls through. He's reborn or something, ends up in New York and is trying to basically do the same thing. Mm-hmm. And creates all of these human slaughterhouses.
Oh, okay, wow. And see, then I was thinking too, because I didn't know that was the concept. My brain just went to this, was like, you know, we used to hunt our own food, but now we go to the supermarket and buy, you know, slabs of beef and whatnot. So yeah, I was kind of thinking along the same lines, like maybe this machine was invented to make vampires' lives easier. And they're planning to kind of do the same thing with almost like a human juicer for a vampire.
Or human juicer. Yeah. Okay, there you go. The Vitamix.
Yeah.
Crush the bones and everything. Make your human slurpee.
Yeah, so maybe Saint Germain's the mastermind of all the vampires to create these machines, you know, and that was like a test that leaked to the public or something.
Oh, I could see a gothic comedy coming on where you've got your local 7-Eleven with the yeah. frozen human.
I do like what we do in the shadows. That's pretty funny. But.
So let's keep going down this route. You've got this vampire that's part of a vampire organization that is attempting to make their lives easier by creating these machines which would harvest humans like we do cattle or, mm-hmm. or other animals for food products. What if we find out in the middle part of the story that it's not from an evil intent? You've actually got an undercurrent of vampire society that doesn't like the fact that they're killing humans. Mm. They're trying to coexist, mm-hmm. but they have to have the human blood to survive. And so what they're doing is trying to create a Red Cross to where you've got like this storage facility. And so they're trying to infiltrate, say, I don't know, the FDA comes along later, right? The Food and Drug Administration comes along later, but infiltrate the medical society in such a way to propagate the need for blood donations so they can have their, you know, supermarket. And the humans are none the wiser. So if we've got that, you could imagine you've got like the good vampires and the bad vampires, which kind of goes along the blade line, right? What would we take it from there?
Well, Saint Germain, he's definitely still got to be the bad vampire since he was the one who was attacking people in New Orleans and stuff like that. So I guess the next step would just be creating the hero, whoever that is, that's out to stop him.
Okay, we'll put a pin on that and come right back to it. Because that particular article where he chased this woman out the window, right,
mm-hmm.
is before, you yep. could consider the idea that that was the turning point for him.
Hmm.
To where you have yeah. a character arc and he actually learns something.
But he still deserves to die.
Sure. Okay. Because of all of the evil deeds prior to throughout his lifetimes. So I'll just toss that out there. But let's keep going with the idea that he's a bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this woman, she escaped and came out alive.
Yeah.
Okay. what happens with her?
Historical record doesn't show that's her exit point in the story. She didn't die. In real life folklore, I don't think getting bit turns you into a vampire always. I don't remember how you become a vampire. But, I mean, maybe she could have become a vampire herself. Maybe she's the good guy. I don't know.
Okay. Now, my recollection in the vampire world is it depends upon the author or the storyteller. Mm-hmm. In some cases, you immediately become one if the vampire doesn't kill you. You become one if the vampire chooses that you become one. Maybe he was trying to make this woman his wife, and then she finds out who he really is and then totally freaks out. Mm. So it's a courtship gone wrong.
Yeah.
Ooh, there you go. Now you've got the gothic vampire romance story.
Uh-huh, yeah. It's a popular genre, so.
Okay, so we'll go down that. You've got a vampire romance with a human, and she doesn't know, but figures it out.
Mm-hmm.
Now, do we know at all if she was able to explore and find the blood mixed with the wine?
No, that was the police the next day. I think he just literally bit her on the neck is what she claimed.
Okay. What if she did find that out?
Mm-hmm.
And found, like, his secret human Slurpee stash?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that would be the breaking point in the relationship for her, and he wouldn't let her go. And so that's why he bites her on the neck.
So I would go down the idea that he's trying to just straight up kill her.
Mm-hmm.
Would you take it down the idea that he's trying to keep the romance and turning her into a vampire?
I mean, I guess he could just be a deranged personality who thinks he's good, you know, and he thinks everything he does is wonderful. Kind of like Thanos and Endgame, you know, that sort of thing.
So you're thinking we could mix the difference between a psychopath and a sociopath?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So we've got this sociopath who thinks that he's like, you know, all that in a bag of chips, this grand moral, mm-hmm. superior dictator kind of individual. And for the greater good, he wants to knock this woman off,
mm-hmm.
and have a snack at the time.
Yeah.
Now, she escapes, becomes the good heroine. So the story arc for her is we've got her involved in this courtship. There's a breaking point. She's chased out the window, tries to get the police involved. Does the historical record show that the police actually did something here?
So that's the problem with this story. There's not really a historical record. It's like nobody knows where this story originated, but a lot of people seem to believe it's true.
Okay, so let's presume for a moment that there was an investigation that got covered up. So we could have a situation where, like what we've talked a little bit about before, is the budding intelligence agencies within the federal government are X-filing this.
Yeah.
So they come into New Orleans, they find out what's going on. Now we're kind of into a little bit of that government conspiracy. You've got this third party adversarial situation. And if they're doing that, they're obviously trying to cover for the bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
If we continue going down that line, is the federal government in this case infiltrated entirely with vampires? Or is it that there's just a few of them that are trying to keep we'll go back to the fairy idea from the last episode, the mystical world a secret?
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, well, at least one thing about vampires in real life as opposed to fiction is that they can go out in sunlight. The whole disintegrate in the sun thing, I think, came from Stoker.
Okay.
You know, so I mean, in this version of that world, you know, vampires could possibly go out in sunlight and you wouldn't have any idea that they were vampires and stuff like that.
Fair.
So I think they could infiltrate the FBI with no problem.
So we've got effectively a federal agency being controlled by an adversarial opponent to the human race that's trying to keep vampires a secret and create the 7-Eleven for the human blood Slurpee dispenser machine.
Yeah, that's what I like. And maybe the good guy is one of the cops that worked the Germain crime, you know, back in 1904. Or maybe it's the descendant of one of Germain's victims and it's set really in the 1920s or something. You know, I mean, we could go that route.
Now, we are hitting on a lot of different ideas. And a few episodes back, I don't know why my brain just popped this up, but a few episodes back, we talked about the pygmy mummy
mm-hmm.
that had the teeth. What if somebody got pricked when that mummy.
Oh, I like that. Yeah.
You know, came about in its excavation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that mummy was like legitimately a vampire.
Yeah.
Vampires had long lost the world to humans.
Mm-hmm.
So we're thinking kind of like the, I don't know, the Stargate situation, right?
Yeah.
Where not only did humans overthrow their oppressors, they buried the gate and, you know, they got rid of it. And then in an archaeological excavation, this pygmy mummy's found, somebody gets pricked, they turn into a vampire, and now they're alone. They're living forever. All of their loved ones goes away. They figure out that they can create their own family, right? And so now we have a reason to sympathize mm-hmm. with the vampires, even though they're evil.
Yeah.
Or unfortunately taking lives of innocent individuals.
Yeah, and for anybody listening that didn't listen to past episodes, we're talking about a true story, not the vampire aspect, but about the San Pedro Mountains mummy from about 1932. They found this little tiny person that was an adult, that wasn't a child, and it's kind of this mystery. So the mummy is real, and so is legend and lore that sometimes the little people would drink blood. But yeah, so anybody listening, that's what that was.
Yes, so that can be found at plotbit.com. Episode 3, A Lost Village, A 6-Inch Mummy, and A Fairy Mafia. So you can find that at plotpit.com. And follow us on Twitter. There's our social media plug. You can also find us on many of your podcasting favorite applications, such as Amazon, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Apple, Google Play Store.
Yeah, actually, before we close out, I know we're winding down, but I've got one little more tidbit about Saint Germain. So this is in New Orleans. Some people have seen the alleged Civil War photo of Nicolas Cage.
Oh, yeah.
There's a photo of a guy that looks like Nicolas Cage from the Civil War. Some people say Nicolas Cage is a vampire, and he already has his mausoleum picked out in, I think, New Orleans or somewhere in Louisiana.
Oh, wow.
So you could almost draw some parallels between Saint Germain and Nicolas Cage and just do a movie about a vampire who's an actor and does all this. So that could be another way to take that.
And that kind of goes along the Dorian Gray thing is,
yeah.
You know, like this idea of a playboy in high society mm-hmm. or maybe not high society, but just this celebrity that loves public attention
yeah.
and has to find a way to hide certain aspects of his life.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a very cool connection there. And then if we go down that route and you have Germain being an actor in Hollywood, you can forego the conspiratorial aspect of, say, the FBI or CIA mm-hmm. or
yeah.
the federal government or whatever, and go down the road of your studio executives have to clean up after their stars
yeah.
because uh-huh. of public opinion.
Yep.
And then that taps into the idea of all of your rock stars or your major country stars or whatever getting busted for drugs
mm-hmm.
and then skating out of prison time or whatever just because they went to a drug rehab clinic.
Yeah.
So you've got that historical record to account for, you know, these cleanup crews coming in after certain poor behaviors have happened. And if Nicolas Cage was a vampire and listening to this show, that would be fun to get
yeah,
him in.
Yeah. He has one of my books, allegedly. He has my book, the big book of Japanese giant monster movies, The Lost Films. Allegedly, he owns a copy of that.
Oh, hey.
Yeah.
That's cool. How'd you find that out?
The guy who sold it to him, the guy who owns a toy shop in L.A. either gave it to him or sold it to him. I didn't understand which. He's Japanese and the English is kind of rusty, so but he told me Nicolas Cage has my book, so that's cool.
Oh, that is yeah. fun. Speaking of which, you have the book in front of you.
Yeah, the source material for this book was Cowboys and Vampires, so titled just because it's period era vampire stories from North America. So that's where I got this this story about Saint Germain, and it's full of plenty of other allegedly real life vampires if you're interested. So again, Cowboys and Vampires.
And then what I brought to the table today was from the Mountain Home Maverick. You'll find this on chroniclingamerica.gov, July 11, 1907, page 6, headline, Vampire Pipe. And the originating article that I found, which actually references the date that this occurred, as opposed to just a synopsis of the event itself, can be found, again, Chronicling America, and it is the Iowa County Democrat, Mineral Point, Wisconsin, Thursday, May 16, 1907.
Oh, no, you didn't say Mineral Point, Wisconsin.
Mineral Point, Wisconsin.
Mineral Point, Wisconsin has a vampire.
Ooh.
So maybe we'll have to return to that one day.
All right, so next episode, we might hit vampires again. Specifically, the article is about Centerpage, and it's titled Blood Sucked Away. Engineer meets unusual death in a Chicago plant. Chicago, May 12th. By having most every drop of blood drawn from his body when his leg was caught in a suction pipe, Walter Hunter, an engineer employed by the armor company, was killed Saturday while repairing a power plant. The article does go on. I'll leave it there. But Mineral Point, Wisconsin, from the Iowa Democrat. That's the source material. But Mineral Point, Wisconsin, there's a vampire.
Yes.
Interesting.
Very famous one.
Okay, so there we go. We'll pick up on that in episode 7. You've been listening to Plot Pit, folks. Follow us on Twitter. Hit us on any one of your podcast streaming services. You can also check us out at or on YouTube at Plot Pit, or just run over to plotpit.com. Until next time, you've been listening to Plot Pit.